Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Sharp 600 podcast brought to you by Covers.com. My name is Joe Fortenball. This is episode 132. Thanks for joining us today. It is greatly appreciated as always. A bit of a departure from the norm for this episode. In just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Doug Kazarian from ESPN. We're going to do a little industry talk today. Doug is from Los Angeles, spent some time in Las Vegas, has been working for the worldwide leader for a while now, but with the transition that most media outlets are making into a more aggressive approach to sports betting coverage, Doug has taken on a bigger role within ESPN in that realm. We're going to talk to Doug about the rise of sports betting coverage, what it's like working for the worldwide leader, where he sees the industry going, and of course, we'll talk NFL and college and get some picks for Doug regarding Thursday night and what he might like this week. But we begin with the mother of all spots, something we've been touting on this podcast since episode one. And this Thursday night in Los Angeles, we're supposed to have another opportunity to make a killing. Now, for those of you who are unaware of the situation, it's as follows. Going back to the early 90s, road teams that are traveling 1,500 or more miles across two time zones for a Thursday night game when coming off a Sunday game 4 days prior are 1-12 straight up, 1-12 against the spread. It is a horrific situation for teams in the spot that the Minnesota Vikings find themselves for Thursday night. So originally, the thought process was, like last year, when we cashed in playing the Raiders on Thursday night over the Chiefs, because the mother of all spots pointed to the Raiders in that situation, we figured we'd make a killing on the Rams. However, big pause heading into Thursday night's game for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, the Buffalo Bills did us no favors. The best case scenario from week three in the NFL would have been the Chargers to give the Rams all they could handle and then for the Vikings to hammer the Bills, giving us a tight line for Thursday night. Instead, Buffalo pulls off the biggest NFL upset in 23 years as 17-point dogs by rolling into Minnesota and beating the Vikings, and the Rams cruise over the Chargers, which has Thursday night's point spread at either Rams minus 7 or Rams minus 6.5. That is way too big for this matchup when you factor in, number two, the injuries to Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters. Peters suffered a strained calf against the Chargers. He's scheduled to miss the next 2 to 4 weeks. Talib is going to undergo a second opinion on his ankle, but many are expecting him to require surgery. So bottom line right now, that is way too big a spread for the Rams over the Vikings Thursday night to buy into the trend, the mother of all spots that we've been talking about for a while. Now, maybe come later in the week, we'll look to open up a teaser with the Rams. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Fortenball. We'll have the official pick on Thursday. But for right now, we just wanted to advise pumping the brakes on the Rams for a Thursday night showdown with the Vikings.
Oh, Jesus, what have you been living on?
Living a little light, I told you.
You've seen him all over, the worldwide leader, ESPN sports betting analyst and host of the Behind the Bets podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Doug ESPN. Doug Kazarian making his return to the Sharp 600. Doug, welcome back to the pod, man. I appreciate your time. How's life been treating you?
Of course, Joe. I appreciate it as well. I know they say Dodgers and Giants fans, NorCal, SoCal, shouldn't get along, but we managed to make it work here on the podcast. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. Now, a few weeks ago, you wrote a tremendous piece for ESPN about the first bet you ever made and what kind of led you on the journey to where you are today. Now, I don't want to ruin the article for our listeners, but I would like to borrow from it for some context. What originally landed you in Las Vegas, and then what eventually led to you scoring a gig at ESPN?
Well, thanks for the compliment on the piece. So basically, I've always been interested in point spreads ever since my first bet back in the day on the Super Bowl, $5 with one of my older brothers. And, you know, it's just always fascinated me. I've always been a math guy. Like, I took two math classes my senior year in high school instead of one. And, you know, I just always been fascinated with numbers, and I've enjoyed sports. Obviously, I'm a sports junkie. So when I got into the business, I did the conventional anchoring. I was in Missouri, then Iowa, and then I got a job in Vegas from a posting online. So I went to start to work in Vegas, and everyone doesn't really realize, but betting is like their home team. Well, now they have the Golden Knights, but people thought that Vegas didn't have a professional team. I'm like, well, kind of boxing, UFC, running Rebels, and betting are their home teams. So you have to cover it. But given that I was already very familiar with the space, I thought it was great. And then over the course of my 7 years working in Las Vegas, I became more established, I guess, in the local scene. So in due time, I launched a radio show that was 100% focused on betting, and I did it with two good buddies who were in the media as well. And then eventually from midnight, we moved over to ESPN local radio. We got bought out, so to speak, and just really had fun time, like guest handicapping in the newspaper. I did a Doug's quick pick on my local sportscast at the end of the night. I mean, just think about it, Joe. When you're in Vegas, you can do this stuff. So 10 years ago or whatever it was, I had Kickers, which is like the last sort of story in the sports block. You know, we see it as like the squirrel on the water ski. I did a kicker on like a bad beat if there was a really notable one in football or basketball or whatever. And then I also gave out a pick on the 11 o'clock news for the next day for betting. And it was just a fun thing to do. It's part of the daily sort of association in Vegas. And then in due time, I was there 7 years and I had an agent and all that jazz. And, you know, I was able to orchestrate a meeting and interviews at ESPN. And then the worldwide leader came calling, so I went.
You know, I lived there from 2011 to 2014, Vegas, that is, and I remember vividly exactly what you're talking about, betting being the home team. I was out with some guys. You might know Mitch Moss and some of the guys from VSiN, and we were out watching the Florida State-Auburn National Championship game. And you'll probably remember this game because Darren Rovell had the big story all over ESPN about the guy who had bet on Auburn at the beginning of the year at like 300-1 and whether or not he was going to hedge the bet. And ESPN throws up this graphic of the 50 states and the outcome of the poll. And 49 states voted that they wouldn't hedge the bet. What do you think the one state was that said it would hedge the bet?
Yeah, Nevada, right?
Absolutely.
There's so many ways to do it. You can do it with live wagering. You can do it with an alternate prop bet. So let's say the line was like 3, I want to say. FSU was favored by 3 or 7. I can't really remember. But you can get, like, you don't have to do FSU money line. You can even go FSU plus 10.5 and lay 500 or something like that and really try to get creative and do all sorts of things. So definitely the Nevadans are quite familiar with the concept of hedging a bet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what's it like for you? You make the transition to ESPN. The Supreme Court rolls back PASPA. Suddenly, sports betting is now being covered on all the major networks. For you, what's it like to be one of the premier faces on the biggest sports network on the planet? I mean, you are the sports betting guy. There are a lot of people coming to you for information. What's that like?
Well, it's definitely different. I will say, I think over the past handful of years, there's a lot of people at ESPN who know their stuff, some off air, some on air, right? I'm not the only guy who knows what a point spread is. And then for the past year, I've been contributing more and more to ESPN Chalk, hosting podcasts more regularly. But, I mean, I was writing stuff a year and a half ago, even on the NBA playoffs. So I think just being welcomed with open arms with all different divisions of ESPN has been great. And then making the full-time transition from SportsCenter anchor to the other side, sort of the guy with the answers instead of the guy asking the questions, has been different for me. But I'm a guy who's sort of comfortable, like, on the move, if you will. Like, I was comfortable bouncing around cities. I couldn't do a 9-to-5 regular desk job for the 30, 40 years at the same company. I just think I'm a guy who gets bored a little easily. So I think just doing this, and it's my passion. I'm sure you can identify with this given our conversations. It's just I really enjoy it, and it's just intuitive. Like, I see something and I think about the betting line. I think about the betting marketplace. I think the Tiger Woods story is really interesting. I think what's going to happen with the Lakers and LeBron is very compelling. I mean, yes, I get the fan part of it, but it's just so interesting. The financial market, if you will, of sports betting is really stimulating.
No, you're speaking my language. We've got to be close in age because when you tell the story about your first bet being a $5 bet, so was mine. And I remember it vividly. It was Penn State Notre Dame. And my father found out about it, and he's as straight-laced as they come. So he's not at all interested in, like, any of this. But it wasn't just that he caught me gambling. It's that, being from Pennsylvania, he caught me betting on Notre Dame rather than Penn State. And, like, the double dipper of that was just blasphemy to him because he grew up on a farm in central PA and it was Joe Pa or nothing. So the idea that not only was his son gambling at such a young age, but he was also betting Notre Dame was blasphemy in my household.
Yeah, it's funny. Having four older brothers, you know, I was very impressionable for a lot of reasons. I found the point spread on my own. Granted, I bet with my brother about it. But I saw the ego allure of it, too. I saw my brother's bet on the Patriots-Bears Super Bowl, the great 85 Bears team, and one was just teasing the other one because it was a giant blowout, obviously. So I felt like that sort of bragging rights with money attached to it was a big reason for the kind of excitement and appeal of it all. But look, I'm a very, like, whatever floats your boat kind of guy. Like, I think a lot of things should be legal. I think everyone, you know, the more people are not asked to be conformists, the better everyone else's sort of peace of mind is. And I'm a big fan of sports betting, obviously, like anything. You don't want it done in excess, right? Like, but we have problems with food. We have problems with alcohol. We have problems with work. You know, there's workaholic. There's a lot of things that can be detrimental to one's, you know, daily existence. So I just think everything should be, like, let it be and let the kind of market correction work itself out.
That's very well said. At ESPN, since you've kind of stepped into this role, what's caught you by surprise, if anything? Now that you're walking the halls on ESPN campus, you're appearing as an analyst more so than a host, which you used to do. Are you having different interactions with people? Do guys come up to you and want to know what you like for the weekend?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. There's been a few people who are like, hey, who you got in the game tonight or whatever. maybe a few text messages from people like, what are you hearing kind of stuff. And look, I mean, I think what people are learning, at least my exposure with friends or whatever, is that you're going to lose a lot if you play a lot, right? You only have to be, what, 53% to break even, assuming the minus 110.
Yep.
Baseball obviously changes things. And then you're going to have some really bad losses, like, not that I did, but let's say you lay the points with the Vikings. You never had a chance after the first quarter. And that's okay. You take it on the chin. That one counts just as badly as the one where you had a bad beat that you're leading the entire game. So I think the seeing people sort of experience the ups and downs and how this stuff is not like, there's no Miss Cleo in here. You know, just if you like the Patriots Sunday night and they lay a stinker, you can be a huge expert and just have a bad pick.
People don't realize what a grind it is. I've been doing this for so long across so many different platforms, and here at the radio station and even friends I grew up with, my favorite thing about this, my absolute favorite, is that if you give them a winner, you're never going to hear from them. You're never going to hear a thank you. You're never going to get a text. You're never going to get acknowledged. Nothing. You'll probably just end up getting a, I was thinking that too. But my God, if you give them a game that's losing and it's the first quarter, you will hear about how you are the biggest you-know-what hole on the planet for screwing that up. I can't tell you how many people come up to me at the radio station because I do a weekly segment called Beat the Bookie. So if it's a 3-4 week, I'm going to hear about the four losers. If it's a 6-2 week on the winners, I'm not hearing about those six winners.
You know, it's funny, man. I've been doing picks on air in the column and then also on the podcast, but I did them in Vegas too. And for whatever reason, I was red hot during those opportunities. Now, I'll just give you an example. There's a pick in the newspaper this back when it was all print, and it was called the Hot Corner. And the guy who ran it would text me like on Sunday night and be like, hey, I got an opening Thursday. Can you take it? I'm like, yeah, no problem. Like, and this was like NBA. It wasn't like I already had a pick for the football weekend. And like Wednesday evening comes around, I'm like, dude, I got to do a pick for tomorrow. And then I scan and try to find my best play. Like, I just found an old clipping. I was 49-29. Like, I was 20 games above 500. And it's not like these were my best bets. And I texted him, like, hey, I'd love a game tomorrow. Can I have it? Like, it was kind of random sampling, right? But in the Vegas marketplace, I was known as this wizard. And, you know, my analysis was defensible and all because I had to write about four sentences. Now, I was never that kind of percentage as a bettor, right? Like, I think I did well, and I know my stuff to a certain extent. But it is so random. So here I am. You asked me what life is like on switching roles. It's so stressful. Like, I have to do, you know, depending on the weekend. Like, last weekend I did four picks in the column. I went 3-1. Now, I actually really liked the NFL card, but usually I don't at all. And those are my first NFL wins. But on SportsCenter Saturday morning, I do three picks in college football. And thankfully, I believe I've gone 2-1 every Saturday so far. So You're right. It's stressful. And I don't hear any like, hey, nice job on the pick.
No.
One coworker tweeted me. But besides that, it's, I mean, I literally went on air, which is really stressful at times. And I said, this was Alabama against Ole Miss. I go, the team total over is my favorite bet of the year. And now the graphics weren't working or whatever, but they still, I still said it and all that. And they got there by halftime. It was like, I just loved it. And sure enough, like if I had said that and not come to fruition, I would have heard a ton about it. And rightfully so. I think you when you say something like that, you welcome it. But you just, it's really stressful, as you know, because it's a very hard game to beat where 58% you can make a bunch of money at. So you're going to be wrong 42% if you're super successful.
You know, that leads me into my next question. And I've had this conversation with some mutual friends of ours. But do you feel any obligation to this sports betting movement, given your position? I mean, a lot of us that are doing this now, especially you guys on the major networks, you're being looked at in a different light. There are a lot of individuals who have never really followed any of this before. They may have never even made any bets. But now that it's legal, PA, Jersey, all the other states that are on board, people might decide they want to get involved. So do you feel that there's kind of this obligation that at the very least, forget about picking winners, but just to give them the best information possible, because now you've got even more scammers coming out of the woodworks, and it feels like rather than cleaning up the industry, it's almost more murky than ever.
Well, there's a couple things on that. Like in terms of like picks, I think you just have to, it's all about verbiage. Like someone asked me about the Monday Nighter and I was like, I have no clue. I took Tampa Bay in my pick'em league. You know, like just give them sort of like explain what you do. Hey, I'm on this side or whatever. I think that's fair instead of saying you should do this, right? But at some point, people need to be accountable for their own actions. Now, in terms of like the direction, the dialogue, the vernacular we use on air, I think that's for the bosses to kind of sort out, right? I mean, I've had a couple conversations. We as a company are trying to figure out our appetite for coverage and what translates to ratings and what platforms and times of day makes most sense. I mean, I think we're kind of at that Saturday morning, Sunday morning thing. And then as an anchor, I'm sure anchors are more accustomed to, like when they're doing the Vikings highlight, they got to weave in a point spread because Vegas is a metric. It's an analytic. It can be used to further provide context. And so I think when Minnesota loses to the Bills, I think doing a point spread graphic after it is not pushing gambling. It's explaining how significant of the upset that is. It's another way to measure it. Now, the market could have been wrong, and maybe by week 10, if they replay, the line would be 9.5. I don't know. But I think we're all, as a community, becoming more comfortable with the terminology. I mean, go back 5 years. I don't think people were using PPR that regularly, and now we have anchors dropping that on SportsCenter. So I think in due time we'll get there. I think everyone's figuring it out, including states, to figure out legalization. I think eventually we'll get there, but I even said it going into the season in meetings with bosses, like week 4 is going to look a lot different than week 1, and it has, and then week 10 is going to look a lot different than it does right now. And I think we're just getting there and everyone's kind of going at their own pace.
What's life like behind the curtain at ESPN regarding these conversations? Now, I know you can't necessarily share the secret sauce with the game plan. I get that. But prior to PASPA versus now, you know, how many people are talking about it? How big of a story is the idea of sports betting coverage on the ESPN campus now?
Well, I kind of just explained it. There's no deep secrets. I think we as a company, a sports company, worldwide leader, like you said earlier, we have an obligation to serve our sports fans. That's our motto, to serve sports fans everywhere. And if we think doing X, Y, or Z will better serve our consumer, then I think we do it. I don't think it's about necessarily monetizing gambling. I think if our viewer wants, like the proof's in the pudding, you know, like, I mean, something as simple as the Sunday night of the Super Bowl. You don't lead with like a baseball story. You lead with the Super Bowl highlight, right? Because that's what the consumer wants, right? The night of the World Series, you lead with the World Series. We do that Stanley Cup. So that's like one end of the spectrum of duh, that's obvious. And then there's middle ground, like middle of July. Do you do a Michigan and Italy story? Or do you do like the D-backs Rays highlight that was 7-1? Well, what year is it? 2018? Okay. Then maybe that game, especially was played during the day, we don't need to do that highlight unless something crazy happened. And then Snapchat. SportsCenter on Snapchat has a different approach. Their audience is different, right? They have shorter sort of clips, things that resonate beyond the highlights. And then the morning SportsCenters are different. They recap, but they also look ahead. Then you get to the evening. The 6 p.m. SportsCenter preview is more kind of a preview of the night games. The 11 o'clock is very reactionary to games going on. And, you know, I think I saw us get criticized once when we had Monday Night Football was ended and we did a treatment of the game where instead of like a playoff baseball game that had ended 3 hours during the day, and everyone's like, oh, SportsCenter pushing football instead of baseball. It's like, well, no, the late show, the one of record that's later, that gets put to bed overnight, that's going to lead with baseball. Which at 11 o'clock or 11:30 or whatever it is, you lead with the game that was just on and you're leading audience because they're already watching Monday Night Football. So there's a lot of misinformation out there in terms of like what we're trying to do and what we're doing. I think it's pretty simple. I've been in these producer meetings. There's never anything like, oh, we got to push the Lakers. Like, it's none of that. We're literally doing what we think our sports fans want. And it's really hard because we have such a diverse country, and diverse meaning like geography, right? In the Bay Area, hockey is maybe not a huge thing. Maybe it is when the Sharks are good. But then in the South, like, you know, it's like it's really hard to figure out what story is best for all of our viewers because everyone has different tastes of sports, and there's not always the no-brainer of the Sunday night of the Super Bowl. What do you lead with? So to come full circle, where does betting incorporate into all this? Well, it's context, so you want to weave it into a highlight, especially if the storyline resonates. And then maybe in the mornings there's more gambling going into college football kickoff or NFL kickoff. But gambling's been going on for a long time. It's not like the Supreme Court invented it in May, right? So it's been going on, and I don't think it's going to replace fantasy. And I don't think it's going to become this huge substitution effect of SportsCenter. I think SportsCenter is going to be just the same with a little tweak, maybe some more information regarding the gambling. And, you know, maybe there'll be more shows about betting specifically, you know, shows. But other than that, I don't think a lot has changed, at least in the short term, because of the legalization's only at 5 states going to like 7.
When you're considering sports betting content, how much do you need to consider your relationships with the broadcasting rights, for example? Like the NCAA has one view of sports betting. Obviously, the NBA is much more liberal with their stance. Do you have to take those sort of things into account?
I don't know. That's the beauty of being, you know, talent or whatever. I don't have to worry about
great
that
point.
I know, like, I'm working on a piece on Alabama next week. I'm going to work on a piece on the Golden Knights. It's for print. I've never had any restrictions when I, you know, I'm in charge of the podcast, right? The content there, like, I obviously have no restrictions to talk about stuff. And you know, maybe when I go on SportsCenter, I have to say New England instead of the Patriots. But other than that, we're really like, I haven't been told anything. I think our show groups and everything have limitations with video and other stuff, and we've heard Scott Van Pelt talk about some of that. Like Bad Beats typically contains college and NBA and not NFL stuff, but I mean, for the most part, we kind of just do what the news dictates. There's a free, you know, freedom of information or whatever it's called. Like, we have to do some of that stuff, so it is what it is.
Do you envision a scenario in which sports betting analysts like yourself are incorporated into live game broadcasts? You know, for example, like Al Michael and Chris Collinsworth throwing down to the sidelines or throwing out to Vegas at halftime of a Sunday Night Football game for maybe an in-game point spread report or something like that?
I've actually mentioned that, like kind of like our rules experts and stuff like that. You never know where it goes down the road. I think it all depends on the company, all depends the state, the number of states being legalized. I think it all depends on that. I think anyone who says they know exactly what it's going to look like in X amount of years is lying. I think it's very unknown moving forward, right? Look, we saw the NBA get on the dais with the MGM and say, we're their official sponsorship, right? I never thought I'd see that, especially after the Tim Donaghy scandal. So when you see things like that, you see partnerships, we see the Meadowlands on the same property basically have a sports book as where the Giants and Jets play. I think that's something I never thought I'd see, guys being able to bet from their seats on their phone in the state of New Jersey during an NFL game. Yeah, we saw it at Wembley, but not here in the States. And then we're going to see it with the Raiders in Oakland. So a lot of things I thought I'd never see, we're seeing, including an NFL team in Vegas. So I'm very careful to make any sort of proclamations. I think the sky's the limit, but I think we're really good at figuring it out as we go along, as our other networks, and everybody's going to kind of do it what they at their own timeline.
Do you think CBS will try to incorporate any sports betting coverage into their coverage of this year's Super Bowl or March Madness, or do you think we're still a few years away from that?
Oh, this year coming up? Yeah, we're not going to see it at all. I thought when you asked me the original question, it was more like down the road, like 5-10 years. I think 5-10 years, we could see some stuff in-game and things along those lines. But yeah, in the near future, I don't anticipate any of that. Because I just don't think that I don't think it's relevant, honestly. If you're a play-by-play guy, like Joe Buck last week with the Browns mentioned the point spread, I believe, twice during the broadcast. And I thought he did it in a very professional and mature way, explaining that they're favorites, this team that hasn't won in so long, the favorite. But I don't think they're talking about the point spread decision. I don't think it matters, the game of the broadcast, right? You see what I think if you're calling a game, and let's say it's the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas and the crowd's reacting, yes, then you probably should be aware of it and point that out to the viewer, because it's part of what's going on in the field of play. But on a broadcast, like a Joe Buck talking about the Browns being up 4, saying they're covering, I don't think that furthers the experience for the viewer. I really don't. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't think it needed to be said last week in that specific broadcast. So I think in due time, maybe a Super Bowl, if they're going to lose or whatever, maybe it's a really notable headline. But I don't think the broadcasters have to be totally immersed with the point spread, unless it's like a crazy, stupid lateral play in the back door, a ridiculous cover at the end of the game. Then I think it's relevant when it's a really significant headline in terms of the outcome of the point spread. But I don't think it should be weaved in on a constant basis in a broadcast.
All right. It wouldn't be a sports betting podcast unless we actually talk some legitimate sports betting. So let's do a little rapid fire buy or sell in the NFL. I'm going to throw some teams at you. Just tell me if you're buying or selling them from a Super Bowl futures perspective. And if you want to give some analysis, feel free, but we don't need to go too deep here. I'll start with the 3-0 Kansas City Chiefs. Buy or sell on their Super Bowl futures?
I'm buying, because we all want to wait for this thing to slow down, this train, and it will. There'll be times where he's not throwing for a million touchdowns, Patrick Mahomes. But I think we need to sort of maybe accept that this is the Golden State Warriors, when they sort of reinvented the wheel with three-pointers, that what's going on in the NFL. Look, we know about the player safety, the protection of the quarterback. Andy Reid has been this innovator on offense, always wanted a guy like Mahomes. Alex Smith put up great stats, so you get a guy with Mahomes' arm. I don't see why this can't be the greatest show on turf part two, and he continues to put up ridiculous numbers given just how advanced offenses are. Look at that, the rookie quarterbacks, right? In the past, we used to say, oh, they're not ready, they got to sit for a couple years. Now look at all these guys. They're so much more advanced coming into the league. That's because of the Elite 11 in the college game, and then the NFL is now using a lot of sort of qualities of the college football, whether it be the spread, the rapid fire. There is stuff now in the NFL from college that we did not see a while ago. So I think Mahomes is more equipped. I know he's not a rookie, but he's essentially a rookie. He's more equipped to handle all this and be more of a true representation of what he's going to be like moving forward, rather than just kind of a flash in the pan hot start like we've seen some other quarterbacks in the past that ended up flaming out.
Buy or sell the Philadelphia Eagles?
I think I'm still buying. You can't formulate too much. Look, Adrian Peterson ruined it for everyone, right? When he busted up his knee and came back and was great. I think these guys just need time. I think Wentz will be great, back to being great next year. For Eagles fans, they're probably hoping that it's the end of this year. Just give it time. And that game against the Colts was really strange. They doubled they just dominated them in yards and first downs. It was a couple fluke turnovers. So I say I'm still buying that Eagles team, because the division is not that great. So I think the Eagles should be fine there.
We're consistently told to not overlook the New England Patriots when they have these little hiccups. But, Doug, I'm telling you, man, they look slow offensively. They look slow defensively. Are you buying or selling the Patriots for the Super Bowl?
Selling. I'm with you, man. Look, I know we've been fooled a couple times, but I don't recognize anyone on this team. Devin McCourty's the only guy on defense I know. I think the Brady-Belichick internal strife that Ian O'Connor's book that came out this week highlighted, and going back to Seth Wickersham's piece, I think it's legit. And I don't think Brady's bad. I think he's still a really good quarterback. but I don't think they have the weapons. I don't know what's going on with their running game. Yeah, they'll get Edelman back, and if Josh Gordon ends up being anything, this will change things, but I don't see how they're one of the best teams in the AFC. The top, like, three teams. I don't think they are.
Buying or selling the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I'm buying. They started out slow last year, 2-3, if I'm not mistaken. And the Bell thing, if they trade them, I'm a little hesitant. But, look, their offensive flow is still very good. They'll be fine. I'm not as confident. I mean, they're not, like, the favorite by all means. But I'm still buying them as maybe a top three team in the AFC.
Thursday night football, the Rams are laying 6.5 against the Minnesota Vikings. Historically, this is a terrible spot for the road team, having to travel this far across this many time zones for a game on just 4 days rest. Any lean on the point spread here?
I would lean Rams. I don't think I'm going to want to lean against them all season. I think they're that good. They are the best team in the NFL in my eyes. 6.5, obviously you're paying a tax that Thursday night component that you just alluded to, but I want no part. I just feel like there's better bets to make than betting against the Rams right now. So I always lean to the Rams or pass because they're just so explosive. We saw what McVay did on the opening Monday night in the second half, up 6, I want to say, throwing the ball with like 6 minutes to go, not getting conservative, which is a total pet peeve of mine, playing to win, not for field goals, and going for it. So laying an extra point or two with a coach who is super aggressive, I'm more than okay with that.
That's a great call that I don't think many people have paid enough attention to, that the Rams are willing to keep their foot on the gas for 4 full quarters. You saw it with Andy Reid and the Chiefs, even against the Niners this past weekend. They throttled back a bit and let San Francisco get back in this game. The Rams are going to be that team that prevents that backdoor cover, or at least tries to prevent that backdoor cover throughout the course of the season. Final question for you, college football. I spoke with Chris Andrews from the South Point last week about this Alabama team. Essentially, I asked him, can you set these lines high enough? And he told me a story where, and this is last week, that he has his own power ranking system. And he doesn't claim it's perfect. It's just something he uses as a guide. And all his years bookmaking, he has now made Alabama the highest power-rated team since Charlie Ward's Florida State Seminoles in the early 90s. That's how high he thinks of this team. You said you're writing a piece on Bama right now. Do you think there's anyone out there even worth considering for the national championship outside of the Crimson Tide?
The only question would be is if they lose the SEC championship game to Georgia, because they're going to get Auburn, the Iron Bowl at home, and they're going to take care of LSU. So I don't think there's any chance they lose before the SEC title game. Will they still both go? Will the loser get to go to the – now, it depends on Clemson and Ohio State and Oklahoma. Now, if those teams run the table, then it's going to be hard to take Bama if they lose to Georgia. That would be the only thing, because my money's on Saban with a month to prepare for the college football playoff. We saw it. What happened last year. I think Tua is the difference maker. That's the focus of my point, my piece, is that Tua, you know, to the untrained eye, Alabama's like, oh, yeah, the number one team in the country, they're 4-0, you know. But, like, no. This offense, he has the highest passer rating in the country and highest yards per pass attempt, which is so rare for Nick Saban, as we all know. He's got usually had game managers as quarterback. Now he's got a guy who's the favorite to win the Heisman and a guy who might be the number one overall pick in 2020. So you have this element. They lead the country in scoring in both the first quarter and second quarter, and then, of course, the first half as well. They are an explosive team. Tua has not taken a single snap in the fourth quarter. They take the foot off the gas in the fourth quarter. I don't think we realize how explosive this team is. Some of the odds makers I spoke to said it's the highest power rated team they've ever seen. And a lot's just like the era and the game's evolution. But Ed Sammons at the Westgate said he'd favor this team by 13 over the peak USC, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart teams.
Really?
And by 21 over the Florida Gators or Tim Tebow.
Really? 13 over that? Those USC teams were nasty. Reggie Bush, I remember to this day.
They were.
I mean, I'm 37. I think Reggie Bush is the best college football player I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was just talking like look, they run more plays now. The players are better. The technology, the offensive knowledge. I mean, you look at the old days, it looks like archaic football, right? How bad some of that. So I think he was more just saying it's impossible to come up with a real point spread. But he's like, this team, I mean, they're dropping 50 in the first half sometimes. Like, they can score 100 in a four-quarter game if they had to against some of these teams. They're favored by 48 this weekend. It's the largest point spread between two FBS teams in 5 years. Last week, they were favored by 25 or so against A&M. It was the largest point spread involving two ranked teams in, I believe, 5 years as well. There is just an inflation to their point spread, and it's for good measure because the first 3 weeks this season, they covered the first three games, so won and covered by a combined 58 points. That was tops in all of college football. So think about that. The number one ranked team in the country, who already is going to have high expectations with the point spread, is outperforming their number more than any other team in the country. They were that good, even though they were already ranked number one, they were being kind of undervalued.
ESPN sports betting analyst and host of the Behind the Bets podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at @DougESPN. Doug Kazarian with us here on the Sharp 600. Doug, I really appreciate the time, man, and I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for the willingness to jump on with me today. I appreciate it.
I enjoyed it too, Joe. Always fun. I appreciate it, man.
No more. No, not tonight.
All right, that'll do it for episode 132 of the Sharp 600 podcast. Thank you, first and foremost, to Doug Kazarian from ESPN for spending some of his time with us today. It is greatly appreciated. Thank you to all the listeners out there for your continued support. Remember, if you get an opportunity, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. We'd love for you to hit us up. Give us any feedback that you feel could help improve the podcast. But for now, everyone, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back in a few days with your college football preview, with your NFL preview. We're cooking, baby. 3-1 in the NFL last week, 3-1-1 in college. It's time to keep it rolling here on the Sharp 600. Be well and best of luck.